Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by High-Tech Answers and Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Answers Media Network, and is sponsored by the Law Offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here is your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Matt Saperin, Chief Executive Officer of PeriGen. Welcome, Matt.
Matt, nice to talk with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you on. And before we kind of dive into the main topic of our discussion today, could you just give everyone a little bit more of an introduction in terms of who you are and what you do?
Sure, Matt. I am the CEO of PeriGen. And, in short, we're in the business of reducing bad events in childbirth.
That is actually very short and succinct. And I think that's going to be, a very good and wide-ranging topic for us to get into, because, I suspect not too many people are aware of it. But, one other, kind of prefatory question before we get into it is, have you always been in this area of healthcare, or kind of what brought you into healthcare in the first place?
That's a great point, Matt. I got into healthcare probably 20 years ago or so. I initially started some work with WebMD, building out some strategic applications to try and capture data for clinical trials, to try to expedite clinical trials, which is pretty inefficient. And from that point on, I've always really been struck by inefficiencies in healthcare and the opportunities that I believe technology presents itself. Spent a fair amount of time working at Eclipsys as a precursor to its acquisition by Allscripts, and worked in a number of different places there, product development. I ran our remote hosting business for a while, ran our services business for a long time, and then after Allscripts and Eclipsys came together, I had the opportunity to run all of our client sales business for a couple of years as well. So, it was a great opportunity for me to progress that concept of, where can technology improve clinical practice. But ultimately, I came to feel that, there was much more that can be done beyond just EMRs and documentation. Certainly important, but I felt that we could go a little bit deeper with technology. And fortunately, at that time, I came across some board members from this company called PeriGen, which was very small, not quite what we are today. But which had developed the ability to use artificial intelligence to interpret fetal strips in real time and essentially raise its hand and say, hey, we have a problem over here. Come look at it. And, I just thought that was a remarkable application of technology. As I started digging into that business a bit, I became aware of the fact that, of all the bad outcomes in childbirth, probably more than half of them are actually preventable, which just motivated me even more to join this company and figure out how to reduce that. Because, preventable bad outcomes in childbirth, it just seems so illogical. Childbirth is, if there's not a pre-known issue, a pre-existing issue, everybody walks in like I did to a labor and delivery room, and you're a little nervous, but you're expecting to walk out with a happy, healthy child. And when you realize how many things can go wrong and how many close calls there are, and then you realize that half of those are preventable, it was pretty depressing to me at the time. I mean, fortunately, I had had my kid, both of whom did very short stints in the NICU. Fortunately, not a problem. But it just seemed to me a great opportunity to look for how technology can help clinicians do their job a little bit better. And that's where we are today.
So, and when you're talking about, potential complications around childbirth, and as you said, with, looking at that, a lot of the things are preventable, kind of what are the scopes and types of issues? And then, once you kind of define that broad category, what are the ones that, as you're saying, are more easily preventable?
Sure. Well, I think it's been in the news quite a bit in the last year and a half, the rates of maternal mortality and morbidity, and the rates of fetal morbidity and mortality. I mean, it's pretty shocking to think that you're safer. A mom is safer having a baby in Saudi Arabia or Turkey or Albania or Russia or Thailand. They all have lower rates of maternal mortality than we do in the U.S. And that's, you know, that just strikes me as crazy. You know, I don't know any other term for it. And frankly, you know, maternal morbidity, the data is very, very similar to that. You know, that's just, there's such great opportunity for improvement there. And when I say that a lot of it is preventable, you know, rarely, there have actually been a number of studies that show that a lot of the bad outcomes that happen in childbirth that are preventable all root back to this statement of failure to recognize and treat clinical warning signs. Frankly, it's subtle warning signs that clinicians miss, or that clinicians, I don't want to say choose to miss, because I don't think they mean to, but you know, there's biases in place, there's levels of experience in place, there's denial, there's wishful thinking, tunnel vision. They might be down the hall helping their colleague who has an emergency as well. And there's been a tremendous amount of studies done that show that, you know, lack of knowledge or skills is actually relatively uncommon as a root cause. I mean, these nurses know what to do. These clinicians know what to do. But it's the subjectivity of interpreting a fetal strip, given what we as an industry have provided as a tool set to date, that is really at the heart of the matter here. So we just have failed, frankly, as technology vendors to continue to progress the diagnostic tools to arm clinicians with what they have to face today in the United States. And we have, of all the industrialized nations, we score essentially the worst on maternal mortality and maternal morbidity. And it's a travesty. Part of it is, you know, social determinants. Part of it is the fact that moms are a little bit older now. Moms have a higher degree of diabetes and hypertension, you know, obesity. These are all things that are bad for childbirth. But at the end of the day, we are missing what these patients are telling us, because we're doing a bunch of other things at the same time. And because we have experiences that lead us to believe that if we hold on a little bit longer, things are going to work out with this baby. And it's really the subjectivity inherent in how a nurse is helping a patient in childbirth that lead to all these problems. And what we want to do at Perigen is just take the subjectivity out of it. You know, we're not interested in telling people how to perform medicine. Everybody's quite well trained, but it's a question of recognizing that something is going wrong and having a reference point for that recognition, such that 1,000 nurses or 1,000 clinicians will look at that the same way. That's what we really need, I think, collectively as healthcare providers to really strive for, is standardization and definition around what is happening right now. If there's, you know, you asked what are some of the key warning signs? Well, there's all sorts of fetal heart rate patterns that are really troubling and should be troubling. Fetal heart rate decelerations, not one discrete one, Matt, but if there's a pattern over time, if you're seeing a pattern over time of variable heart rate decelerations in the fetus, there's a problem there. You know, and a lot of times nurses and docs, residents, any clinician just don't have the tools to consider that labor over time. They're looking at a, you know, 10 or 13 or 15 minute window of fetal heart rate strip that's showing on the monitor, but they're not looking across what the last 4 hours were. What were the patterns over the last 4 hours? And this is where computers are really, really good. And, you know, computers don't have any biases. Computers don't look at a problematic strip and say, I've seen this a bunch of times before, everything's going to work out. It might work out, and it clearly sometimes these problems will work out, but there's those occasions where they don't, and that's where Perigen wants to try to step in.
So, and actually, maybe taking one quick step back, and I think this has kind of been implied in some of what you're saying. So kind of the issue that you're looking at, it sounds like you're looking at specifically once the woman isn't already in labor, if you're talking about looking at fetal monitor, you know, fetal heart monitoring strips and other care that's occurring around it. So it's not necessarily going back in time to earlier points during the pregnancy.
You know, for the most part, I mean, we also have analytic tools that help clinicians look at patients during the third trimester. There are things called non-stress tests where moms will come in and the nurse or doc will listen to the fetal heart rate to make sure that it is accelerating the right way. And so you know, there's a fair amount of subjectivity in that as well. And we help with that as well. You know, bad outcomes in labor and delivery, there's no silver bullet, Matt. I mean, you know, it's one of the most multifactorial issues I think we have to contend with in U.S. healthcare today, which is why it's really risen to a crisis level. But the fact of the matter is, if you can identify inactive labor when something is starting to go wrong, you at least have an opportunity to really consider if there is an intervention that makes sense. You might choose that there isn't at that moment, but at least you're having that conversation. And that's really what we're after.
Yeah, no, I think it certainly, as you're describing it, it's putting more comprehensive and more analyzed data into the hands of the clinicians, as opposed to, as you said, you know, looking at one, you know, just one small piece of a snapshot in time. And, you know, so it's really trying to give, I think, as you're saying, more standardized information and more standardized kind of results that can then be applied to the medical knowledge of the clinicians involved.
Yeah, you don't teach nurses necessarily to count. You don't go to nursing school to count, right? You go to nursing school to learn how to care for patients and let the computers do the counting and let the computers do multifactorial calculations and look at quantifying data over a long stretch of time. Let the computers do that. Let the nurses care for the patient. That's what we're really all about. It's almost considered as division of labor. You know, you can sit there with a notepad and count every single heart rate deceleration and acceleration and contraction, and you can argue about whether or not, you know, they lasted for this long or that long, or you can just let a computer do that, that looks at everything the exact same way every single time. What you do with that information is where the skill of nursing and medicine really comes into play. But let us do the counting for you.
Yeah, no, and that's a great point. And it really, I think it really goes to the heart of, I think, where you're starting to see more of the storylines and more of the discussion about technology-based solutions as being a complement and a supplement to clinicians, as opposed to, you know, what I think was grabbing more fear-based headlines over the more past couple of years of, oh, you know, all these tools are going to replace the clinicians. You know, I think,
yeah, there's two big problems, two huge problems I come across still all the time. One is fear, which you just said, they're going to take my job. And the other is inertia. I've had plenty of department chairs say, yeah, I get it. And I've looked at this 80,000 birth study, but you know, I'm really not convinced yet. And I think I'm going to invest more in education. And education is not the issue. As I said earlier, there's plenty of studies that show that these clinicians are quite well trained. Education is not the issue. Education is important and critical, and simulations are critical. But how do you really make that stuff matter? You make it matter by having a very consistent way by which you say, these circumstances are happening here right now. Put your education to work, right? It's not the education, it's putting it to work that matters. And that's where everything is so subjective. So it's really interesting to me, and it would be comical if we weren't talking about real life situations, but you know, hospitals educate and learn and drill and train on specific care paths and protocols. And no one really looks at the fact that, you know, they're all dependent on a single human that says A, B, or C is occurring right now. So you get these, you know, very rigid approaches that are based on something remarkably subjective. It's like building an apartment building on sand. You know, it just doesn't make sense.
Yes. No. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Matt Saperin from PeriGen about issues and complications around maternal mortality and morbidity, and talking about how we can help reduce or you know, address preventable issues that have been on the rise and for a while in the United States. And I kind of want to go back to that comparison you were saying, which is, you know, I suspect would be surprising to a lot of people that the United States isn't a leader. And I think that's starting to become true in a lot of areas of healthcare, because I feel like
we're a laggard. If you're pregnant right now, go to Albania. Go spend the next 9 months in Albania. You're going to be safer as a mom having a baby in Albania than you will in the U.S. You know, I mean, that's just the stats. That's the data.
So from that data and from those stats, I don't know if you're able to talk about, you know, have there been any causes or reasons for for that growing lag within the United States?
You know, listen, I think there are lifestyle issues, you know, for sure. I do think that the rates of some of these, comorbidities, as I mentioned earlier, diabetes, obesity, these are things that are very prevalent in the U.S. There are as well, I think, some racial divides. Again, this is just data talking. I think that, you know, Black mothers have a higher rates of some of these issues than non-Hispanic white mothers. I mean, there's a fair amount of, you know, socioeconomic and racial segmentation that you could do when you look at this data. You know, I'm trying to, and we really at Perigen are trying to manage across all of these cohorts. So, you know, very hard for us to impact socioeconomic issues, but far more accessible sort of low-hanging fruit to try to create a baseline, a reference baseline using some tools for clinicians at the bedside.
Yeah, and actually kind of thinking about those socioeconomic factors, does that show that there are, you know, disparities across or within the United States? So, you know, maybe, you know, if you go to an area that's, you know, arguably maybe more affluent or something, you're going to see fewer complications as opposed to more stressed populations?
You know, Matt, it would be hard for me to say that with any, you know, degree of credibility. I haven't looked at that research. There's plenty of that research out there. Absolutely. And, you know, again, as you start looking at that, you know, where you live, access to care. So for instance, I live in the New York tri-state area. You know, we're chock-a-block full of academic medical institutions and, you know, a very competitive healthcare market. If you live in another state, in a different part of the country, it's maybe the population is less dense. You know, you have less choice. Choice is always important for anything in life, right? So, you know, it stands to logic that there's some geographic, that there might be some geographic issues at play here as well. It's interesting. Part of what we're doing, Matt, is we've created a telemedicine component to our solution because we think it's really critical to take the clinical expertise that might exist in these centers of excellence and make it accessible easily to docs or nurses who are out in critical care facilities. We have one client, Avera, that you know, has to help clinicians in very remote areas who, you know, feel pretty nervous. I think they don't see a ton of labor and delivery cases, and so when one comes in, they understand what's at stake, and it's very calming, I think, to them that they have essentially an expert system helping them understand what's going on. So, you know, I think that there's a whole kettle of fish to open up there. I'm probably not the right guy to unpack that right now. It would be a great research project, though, and I'm rather certain somebody has done it.
Yeah, no, and that's certainly fair enough. But I think, as you're saying, where you started to go, which was, you know, it doesn't matter where you are, you know, in any community that you might be located, you want to make sure you have the access to good and valuable resources. And whether that's, you know, you're in a area with a high density of resources on hand, or if you're in a more remote area, allow the access through the utilization of technology.
And this is a paradigm. This is why I'm so glad you've got me on that, because I think what we do now at Perigen is, in my opinion, is a paradigm for what healthcare needs to get to. So, you know, the National Institutes of Health did some research on our solution, and this sounds a little self-serving, and I apologize, but it found that our system was equivalent to an expert evaluation of a fetal heart strip. So imagine having the ability to put that at every bedside that has a laboring patient in it. So then again, whether your nurse is new or has been there for years or has quit coffee or smoking or fighting with their spouse or a million different things that change your perspective, there's always this system that has been found to be equivalent to having an expert at the bedside. That's not to say perfect, Matt, but that's to say equivalent to having an expert. So now take that and explode that out over any service line. I mean, imagine having that in many other service lines, that concept of, hey, there is a tool here that's not telling us how to practice medicine, but it's telling us here are some diagnostic factors you asked us to look for. And without a doubt, based on objective data, not subjective guesswork, this is happening now. Go practice medicine. So imagine having that capability across multiple service lines anywhere, right? So whether you're at, you know, New York Presbyterian, where there's, you know, some of the world's greatest doctors in the world, or you're at, you know, Acme Community Hospital somewhere, where you just don't have that same level of access to expertise, you always have a tool that is sitting there and diagnostically assessing a patient as an expert would. That, to me, is a big win. And that's what this country needs to start getting at. Because if we don't do that, Matt, this country's healthcare system, which is already, as you understand, just spinning towards disaster, is going to continue its acceleration down that that kind of, you know, cyclonic drain. And we just got to find other ways to do things. Healthcare providers have to be more open to technology. You would be stunned, Matt, if I were to tell you how many professional organizations I've talked to that have this sort of inherent distrust of, quote, industry, right? Like, you know, like we're all snake oil salesmen trying to purvey some, you know, Matt, I get it, because there's been a lot of software and a lot of overpromising. But the reality is that I think providers need to shift from being pessimistic and looking at things and pointing out all the shortcomings, and instead being optimistic and saying, hey, look, this can help us here today now, and we can help you make this even better over time. That's the attitude I think we need across healthcare in its entirety, not just in labor and delivery. That is the only way that this healthcare model is going to start improving itself.
No, I definitely fully agree with you there. And I think you also, you know, leading up to that point, made some very good points as well, which is the more that you can have validation from independent parties or through some type of research to demonstrate the value that a particular product or solution brings, as opposed to what is typical in a sales process of overpromising and maybe not actually reflecting the reality, but, you know, be able to present a study and say, here, this shows that this works and that this helps and, you know, will help complement and support what you're doing, as opposed to just trying to say, oh, this is going to be the magic solution. It seems like that will be beneficial in trying to generate that change of behavior.
And anyone who comes in and says magic solution, you know, listen, show them the door, right? And any software vendor who comes in and says, I'm going to change your world, show him the door too. It doesn't happen. You know, I think everybody understands inherently, but let's just kind of put this out there. Everybody understands that there's software, and then there's leadership, and there's you know, protocols, and it all kind of has to work together, right? You've got to have a customer who really cares, who is very focused on making improvements and focused on that service line. You've got to have clinicians who reinforce that down through the ranks, and who spend time determining what's, you know, how are we going to handle this at XYZ Memorial Hospital? And then you have to have technology that says this is occurring now without a doubt, or with, you know, more than a high degree of confidence. This is occurring right now. It's a piece of information you need to know, you know, get at it. And by the way, the next thing that really, really what we've also got to do, if we can switch topics for a minute, because I don't have a whole lot more to say on that one, but, you know, I think we need to switch topics for a second, if we could, Matt, to the alignment of interests in healthcare, because, you know, OB is really kind of gets the tail end of that. You know, we are in most health systems, OB is not, you know, not the administration's favorite, because we're not a huge driver of revenue. You know, we're not transplanting organs. We're not putting in, you know, 10 hips a day. And so that's, you know, so the financial, the way the market works today, we're not that exciting a service line for hospitals to invest in. And at the same time, we are the most litigious by far, probably by 2 or 3x. And so, you know, most health system CEOs probably groan anytime someone brings up OB. But the reality is we've got to find a way to do it better. And there are ways to do it better. Perigen happens to be one of those ways. Where we can make, you know, OB using technology, we can just make it more palatable. But I've had hospital CFOs complain to me, and I think I mentioned this to you once or twice, I've had hospital CFOs complain to me because the number of patients going to the NICU has been reduced, and so their revenue has been reduced. And they feel horrible saying that. And they come to me and they tell me that, and they say, Matt, how else can I monetize this solution? Because we can't continue to invest in tools that reduce our revenue, or else we can't continue to be an ongoing concern. But, you know, you're reducing my NICU admissions. Thank you. And curse you, because I need that money. So, like, to put an executive in that position is immoral, to be perfectly honest with you. It's just unconscionable that a CFO has to face that moral dilemma that, you know, keeping patients out of the NICU is bad for his or her, P&L statement. Like, isn't that kind of absurd? If you're having a kid right now, you don't want to hear that, but that's the fact. That is the fact.
Yeah, no, that dichotomy is very stunning. And I think really, yeah, and it ties into, you know, if as you were saying, we can keep shifting the system and getting to a more value, I think more of a more value driven system, that'll help. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to say that's a great topic for people to be able to think about and ponder, because believe it or not, we're already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Matt Saperin, for a great conversation today.
Thanks, Matt. It's a pleasure. These are weighty issues. They need to be debated and talked about, and I appreciate you giving me some time.
Oh, no, definitely my pleasure. And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.